Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The coronavirus pandemic has transformed the way we live, but it's not the first time this has happened in our culture. Throughout our history, pandemics have had an enormous impact on society and how we're able to live. And although many have drawn parallels to the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, there have been other, more recent pandemics that left their mark on our world. Anne Dressel is the director of the Center for Global Health Equity, and she's one of the presenters in an upcoming webinar all about understanding pandemics. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about this history and what it can tell us about the present.
One of the things that has been interesting about this time period that we're living in is I think we've all had to adopt a kind of new lexicon. And something that people use pretty interchangeably are a number of terms that refer to this kind of disease, this mass disease. So what is the difference between a pandemic, an epidemic, something that is endemic, and, you know, a plague?
Oh, that's a really good question, because those terms have been coming up a lot recently. And it's important that people have a good understanding of what they mean. So for example, an epidemic, that's an occurrence of disease that pops up temporarily at a really high prevalence, meaning a lot of people get it, but it's confined to just one part of the world or a single country. A pandemic is an epidemic that happens worldwide. So it's this, you know, flare up of a infectious disease that's affecting people across a very wide area. So a pandemic is something that arises from an epidemic. And the difference between the two usually has to do with scale. Another term we'll hear of is something called endemic, some sort of infectious agent that's just always there in a certain geographic area. So for example, malaria is endemic in certain parts of the world. My colleagues and I do a lot of work in Malawi and Kenya, and malaria is endemic there. It's just always present. And then the plague is something that I'm sure a lot of people have heard about and comes up a lot. We all have heard of the Black Death in the 14th century, and that was caused by the plague. And that's a very specific type of infectious disease caused by a certain bacteria that's found in small mammals, and then it's spread by their fleas. So it's a zoonotic disease. That means it's a disease that's spread from animals to humans. And in the case of the plague, it was spread through flea bites. So the fleas would, you know, bite these infected animals, and then they'd bite humans, and it would get spread that way. And that was one of the most serious pandemics that the world had experienced. It killed anywhere between 75 to 200 million people globally. And again, this is the middle of the 14th century, and killed 30 to 60% of Europe's population.
So a lot of people have focused on the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. But something that you bring up is there have actually been other pandemics in recent history.
Yes, definitely. Some of the ones that have happened within the past, like 50, 25 years and affected us here in the U.S., include the Asian flu pandemic of 1957 to 58. And that killed a little over a million people worldwide, but it also killed between 70,000 to 116,000 people here in the U.S. And like we're seeing today, it led to school closures. There were economic impacts. In fact, they found that the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost about 15% of its value in the second half of 1957. I think a lot of people have heard of the flu pandemic of 1968. That was something that was first reported in Hong Kong and was brought back here to the U.S. by troops returning from the Vietnam War, because it had spread throughout Southeast Asia. And that too killed between 1 and 4 million people worldwide. And it's not just flus that have caused pandemics. In the last century, we also had a global cholera pandemic in the early part of the 1900s, which actually killed some people here in the U.S. The last outbreak of cholera here in the U.S. was part of that pandemic in 1910 and 1911. And like we're seeing today, there were quarantine measures put in place. And unfortunately, like we're seeing today, there's a lot of stigma attached to it and concerns about, you know, who's bringing these diseases. And a lot of discrimination here in the U.S. against what people were terming outsiders who they felt might be bringing the disease.
That is a common thread, it seems like, in all of these kinds of pandemics. When we look back at, you know, these more recent experiences, what are some of the parallels that we see?
It's easy to draw some parallels, I think, between the current COVID-19 pandemic and the 1918 flu pandemic, as you had mentioned earlier. As of October 13th, the World Health Organization estimates we've had about 38 million cases of COVID-19, and we're coming on to a little over 1 million deaths. We're getting close to 1.1 million deaths globally. And just this month in October, the World Health Organization estimated about 10% of the world's population may have been affected with COVID. Here in the U.S., I think it's no surprise to anyone, we've got the highest number of cases in the world. We've got about 7.7 million cases as of October 12th, and we're getting close to 215,000 people who have died. COVID-19 is also a zoonotic disease, as we had mentioned earlier. It's something that scientists believe originated in an animal, in this case, bats, and was spread to humans. And the flu pandemic was also a zoonotic disease, although that one originated in birds. And that was very deadly. It was the deadliest pandemic in modern history. Scientists estimated that about 50 million people were killed globally and about 675,000 here in the U.S. And it had infected about one-third of the world's population before it died down. But some other similarities, just both of these, the 1918 flu and COVID-19 were novel. They were new diseases. So they're something that people were not immune to. They're both airborne diseases. So they're spread through the air. So when we talk, when we sneeze, when we cough, there's respiratory droplets that are spreading that disease. And then, you know, other people inhale that and get infected. Or we can touch something that has the virus on it, and then touch our mouth, our nose, our eyes, somewhere, it's, you know, somehow that it gets into our system and infects us. Both of COVID-19 and the 1918 flu, there was no vaccine for them. But there were also political aspects to both of them. So for example, during the 1918 flu pandemic, there were concerns about lies and censorship and propaganda. And so it was really suppressed information about the flu at first because politicians wanted to keep morale up during World War I. And it's part of the reason why we sometimes hear it called the Spanish flu, because press coverage about it had been censored, again, to keep morale up, but newspapers were not being censored in Spain. So for example, the king of Spain had come down with the flu. So it got a lot of publicity, and that's one of the reasons it started being referred to as the Spanish flu. And we certainly see parallels today with information, propaganda, lies getting spread on social media about COVID-19, and also political pressure on what information is being released. Relatedly, there were concerns about ignoring the science during the pandemic of 1918. So scientists and healthcare professionals were advocating for containment measures to stop the spread of the 1918 flu. But again, partly due to the war effort, many of those suggestions were ignored. So troops were still being, you know, crowded into ships to get them where they needed to be in the world to help fight the war. There were also issues during the 1918 flu pandemic related to large public gatherings. So for example, there was something called Liberty Loan Parades that were very popular at the time. It was a way to raise support for war bonds to help support the war effort here in the United States. But many big cities ignored health officials' advice and held the parades, which were attended by thousands of people. So for example, Philadelphia had one of these Liberty Loan Parades in 1918, and an estimated 200,000 people attended. And 2 days later, every hospital bed in the city was filled. And again, we're seeing some of that today with large public gatherings, maybe they're political rallies or other events, but things that are happening that go against the advice of healthcare professionals. And that's also related to misplaced priorities. So in 1918, during the flu pandemic, there was a big priority on winning the war. And again, we can see parallels to today with priorities placed on, you know, what's going on with our national elections and people really wanting to win the election. So that comes back to some of these public gatherings that are happening. There were similar control measures in place, both during the 1918 flu pandemic and today, things like quarantining, social distancing, limiting public gatherings, advice about washing your hands and practicing good hygiene, but also mask mandates. And just like today in 1918 during the pandemic, there was a lot of resistance to wearing masks, even though science shows it can help to reduce the spread of disease. History has shown that cities that had strict mask wearing orders or had other protocols in place to help control this disease were less impacted. So they had fewer people who were infected and fewer people who were dying.
Yeah. You know, as you mentioned, of course, we've had a lot of political rallies here in the state of Wisconsin, many of which haven't really required you to wear a mask. There are certain parts of the state where people have been completely unmasked despite state orders. And we're seeing record highs here right now. When we look at how the United States has traditionally responded to these kinds of pandemics, specifically in the context of the rest of the world, where do we generally fit? Do we usually have this many more infected people than other places? Because it does feel atypical.
That's an interesting question. So here in the U.S., we do have excellent healthcare. We have excellent resources, good technology, you know, a lot of smart healthcare professionals. The issue here in the U.S., though, is not everybody has access to it. So the United States is the only high-income country in the world that does not have some sort of national or universal healthcare system that would, you know, ensure everyone has access to a certain level of healthcare. And as a result, our health outcomes are not as good as in other high-income countries. And we're seeing all of that exacerbated now during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're seeing that COVID-19 is disproportionately impacting, you know, our African-American communities, our Latino communities, and it's exacerbating those healthcare disparities that have existed, you know, for many, many years. So we have a lot of good things to offer here in the U.S., but not everyone in the U.S. has access to them. And the current pandemic is really highlighting those things. And I think one thing I would add related to all this that each of us can do is to vote for elected officials that support public health, because there's measures in place right now, you know, or bills that are on the floor at the federal level about getting the U.S. involved in a COVID-19 vaccine global access initiative. It's a global partnership that's focused on developing and then equitably distributing the vaccine worldwide. So if we were at the table, we could certainly contribute a lot to that and also gain a lot from that. Likewise, ask our elected officials to advocate that the United States remain in the World Health Organization and pay our dues. And many people think, you know, that the organization needs reform, but I think it's easier to help reform an organization from within than just to pull out of it. And likewise, we can advocate that our own federal agencies be fully funded, like the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, National Institutes of Health. And another area that the U.S. is behind on compared to other countries is we do not spend a lot of money on public health, whereas that could generate a lot of cost savings on the back end, because I think we all know the old adage that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So it's much cheaper to prevent people from getting sick in the first place than it is to try to treat them and cure them after the fact.
Yeah. Now, as we look at the general arc of pandemics, at least historically, is there a pattern and can that inform what we should expect in the coming months?
Oh, that's an interesting question, because there's been some discussion, for example, about how did the 1918 flu pandemic end? Part of it had to do with, you know, it was so widespread and affected so many people that it got harder and harder for the virus to find, you know, people who weren't already infected. So I know there's been discussion in the media lately about herd immunity, so meaning enough people will have had COVID-19 that'll protect all of us. But we've got a long ways to go to get there. You know, eventually this is going to be running its course through the population, or hopefully very soon we'll have a vaccine that people will be protected. But there's also many of these traditional measures that we've known about for over a century that would help. Things like wearing a mask, social distancing, putting limits on public gatherings, quarantining, hand washing, closing schools, which has happened. We know these measures work, but it's really hard for us to follow them. But I think, you know, with a broader lens of history, we can look back and see, well, it seems like a long time while we're in the middle of this sort of thing. This will eventually wind down, it will end, but we also need to be aware there'll be another pandemic in the future. And so it's really important for the United States to be engaged with other partners on the global level so that we can be better positioned to hopefully prevent a future outbreak, but then also respond more quickly in the future so that fewer people are dying.
Yeah. Well, Anne, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Anne Dressel is the director of the Center for Global Health Equity at UW-Milwaukee, and she spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. She's one of the presenters at a webinar through Freidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin called Inside a Pandemic. The event will be on October 23rd, and you can find more information at wuwm.com.